Brian McQuaid has not played on SLB before. I had to think about that because I've heard a lot about him. I've listened to some of his music. And sometimes over the years, it starts to all roll together. Who, what, when, here, when, how. So today's a first time for him, and I think it'll be a lot of fun to get to know him and to listen. Here is Brian McQuaid.
Well, I didn't come here to warn you and tell you about all things that you've done wrong and try to win you back. Serenade you with a song. I just got this envelope with two pieces of paper inside. I wanted to give to you, yeah, but I was blocked by the sway of my pride. Well, I just hope he treats you a little better this time. Well, I remember when we sat and drank beers by the river. Hey, you told me how afraid you were drowning. And I knew right then, just right then, that you were slipping away. So I tried not to think about the color of your eyes, the way you looked in the morning with your gauges out, and the way you spoke from the side of your mouth was the cutest thing that I had ever seen. Just a 16-ton realization, yeah, when it hit me. So I found myself staring long the neck of a bottle down at sudden death. On that pier, we shared beers and shared an ending. So I thought that it could be apropos, you know. Maybe it's a little bit overdramatic, but in that place where we last met, you know, I said without regret those two tickets to the Ballet on Fire. And I watched the ashes dance like swans till they met the water.
That is Brian McQuaid. Nice song. What's its name?
It's called Kitty Thunder. It's unfortunately, it is a story that a lot of my stuff is based in real life events.
Yeah.
So it was a thing that actually happened with a very, very beautiful young lady.
It's the best songs. Generally, the best songs are come from experience,
yeah,
and from life itself. Tell me a little bit more about you, where you grew up, how you came to playing music.
Sure. I was born and raised in Elwood City, which is about 40 minutes north of here. I went to college in Slippery Rock, and pretty much Coming from a small town and environment, it was a great place to grow up. It was a great place to live. But I was the youngest of three sons, and I always kind of felt that there wasn't enough going on in my small town upbringing. So I escaped to the city pretty much as soon as I can.
When I think of Elwood City, I can't think of it was in Metco when, yeah, I was – when I knew it, but before that, was it B&W, the steel mill, or was it LTV? Big.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking, yeah, about. It changed to Metco when I was young, and to be honest with you, I have no I never remembered it as anything else but a med camp.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I mean, it was that for quite some time.
Yeah.
I want to say it was LTV before that. I might be wrong, but I think of how many folks were employed at that plant over the years.
Yeah.
And it very much defined Elwood City in a lot of ways.
It's a very cool town, like very small, but even it just goes to show in Western Pennsylvania, even the real small towns were steel towns.
Yeah. There's a good article, actually. I can't remember where I read it, but we talk about Pittsburgh's Renaissance all the time. And this article was stating that we need to also consider certainly some Pittsburgh neighborhoods within the city limits that are not necessarily experiencing that same kind of Renaissance, but all the small towns that dot our region, in our river valleys, that some doing better than others.
It's true.
But so, were you playing music in school or in high school, or when did you start?
I started, I believe, around the age of six.
Wow!
I wanted to be a trumpet player. I wanted to be like Louis Armstrong, but I just was really bad about practicing my instrument. I liked the ferocity of the trumpet and how loud it could be, and but I was a kid, you know. I couldn't keep myself on task to practice, you know. And the music that we played was someone else's music, you know. I mean, it wasn't anything that really, like, that I enjoyed playing. I just liked the idea of playing an instrument and being musical. And it wasn't until I kind of found out my own path, like what that was actually going to be. So,
when did you write your first song?
I think I wrote my first song at 13. Me and a couple other buddies were in a garage band, a pop punk band called 5'9". We played a couple shows in high school. I think a singular talent show.
That's a great band name, actually.
Like a graduation party, yeah.
Like the average height of guys or something like that. I love it.
Yeah.
Brian McQuaid is who's here with us today. And why don't we? I want to talk more about your style and what you do and how you do it. But
sure.
You want to share another song?
Sure.
Thanks, by the way, to you for being with us during what kind of seems like a holiday weekend.
This one's a little bit more spirited. They all fear their masters, and I guess that's the way that it all gets done. But I'm just sitting here in a thunderstorm, watching lines of poetry run. And they say that hard truths are hard to find, in spite of how you search. But all I know is my back aches from turning stones, and I fear it only gets worse. And they say that after so many times, a broken heart just gets broke open. But I have to question what kind of masochist develops such callous notion. It's all common sense, but it all seems too culturally specific. And if the only thing I'll ever do is just kick rocks, you know I'd like to at least know their distance. So send me down to Louisiana, send me down to Texarkana, send me down to where those clear, cool colors of the Tennessee River. Send me down to the depths of Hades. You'll find me dancing with the ladies, keeping time with a bottle of wine, waiting for you to come back.
say times are hard, hit the hardest. Still, you gotta respect the artist that can paint the subtlest contours on all your wildest dreams. Except them dreams there in the casket, the ones that never quite kicked the habit of imagining fruition without spending a single ounce of work. And they say below every success there lies a scaffolding of failure. Or you can ask anyone who's got what they want is far more than conjecture. The same muscles that stick your neck out, they hold your head up high. So let them shout those demands now all they want, cause you know we predicated on supply. So send me down to Louisiana, send me down to Texarkana, send me down to where those clear, cool colors of a Tennessee River run. Send me down to the depths of Hades. You'll find me dancing with the ladies, keeping time with a bottle of wine, waiting for you to come back. And you can just tell them that Larch Mart sent you, yeah, through the greens of Appalachia, yeah, on every lonesome mile of highway between the ones you love. And sing a song for every man, yeah, now every man in need, who's running a little short on everything, especially his dreams, especially his dreams, especially.
Brian McQuaid here at the Saturday Light Brigade. You have a great voice.
Thank you.
You really are one of those guys who can sing out in just a terrific way. A lot of people, I think, sometimes will almost duck down beneath their instrument when they play songs that are so significant and interesting. And I sometimes get a little, not frustrated, but disappointed if I can't hear the lyrics that well. I'm always advocating for people to include lyrics in their albums when they release them, so you can at least get them that way. How did you get started performing? Because you're clearly a natural.
I formed a punk rock band.
Well, you did. Oh, 5'9". I remember them really well. This was 5'9" was probably a precursor.
5'9" was
band.
A precursor.
Yeah.
I actually played bass in 5'9". My dad bought me a bass for Christmas when I was 13 or 14. But I still wanted to perform music. And when I was in college, I went through – punk rock spoke to me because I had – lot of youthful exuberance, and I was angry about certain things, you know what I mean? And I felt that I essentially wasn't treated fairly in certain aspects of my life, and that I was kind of silenced and didn't have a voice, and I felt that I had a valid point of view, and I acted out a little bit, and I just wanted something that was raw and aggressive, and that really spoke to me. And I fronted a punk band for 10 years. But then once you hit like your 30s, late 20s, I just wasn't angry about anything anymore.
What band did you front?
It's called Tommy Gutless. We are still in existence. Everyone has wives and kids. As we get together, you know, whenever we can. But
what year did that band form roughly?
99.
Okay, so that's... sort of post-punk. At least post the punk scene I think about.
Yeah.
From between 1980 and 1990.
Of course. Listened to that. And you know, even though we were young, but when we had a chance, you know what I mean?
Which is totally cool.
You can't help when you're born.
Yeah, I know. It's just I'm rediscovering a lot of music from that period and looking back at it kind of nostalgically and I'm hearing new things in it that I never heard before. But it does get tough to keep making music as your life changes, right?
It's true. And I really kind of hit my – I feel like I started to realize what I wanted to do in terms of becoming a songwriter towards the tail end of when Tommy Gutless was playing and touring and performing regularly. And I incorporated a little bit of that aspect in it. And we got a fair amount of praise that we were like this – punk rock influenced essentially like the street rock and roll band that sung about like the American experience. So a lot of people would say, you know, it's like The Clash meets Bruce Springsteen or something, which, you know, it's a compliment. But at the same time, just getting put up with there with those names kind of makes you feel a little uneasy sometimes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But it is pretty cool to put a songwriter's sensibility, a modern songwriter sensibility into a punk idiom is actually really cool.
Yeah,
to think about that. I know there's an event. I think it's this coming Monday. A benefit for Millvale Studios that you're hosting.
Correct. Yeah.
And there was a fire there fairly recently. A lot of art was lost, and we were talking earlier. That you had donated a Hammond B, Hammond organ, and that organ was consumed in the fire too, which is sorry to hear about that. But the fundraiser is to try to help support the artists whose work was there.
It's true. I'm going to be the host for Acoustic Cafe. One of my favorite locally based open mic nights. It's Monday night, starting at 7, promptly at 7 at Mr. Small's Funhouse. And just because there's so many members of the community, Brian Crawford's a good friend of mine. He runs River's Edge Radio. He was the one that I actually gave the organ to because he's like, oh, you can't put this in the trash. It's one of those things you will hunt so long to find a Hammond organ, but you want to, like, when you get rid of it, no one else wants it.
Yeah.
It's everyone's like, that's the cool thing until it's 400 pounds and you have to move it like up a flight of stairs and then nobody wants the thing. It's, you know, it's essentially, you know, based on novelty. But there's so many artists that I know that are friends of mine and even people I don't know who lean so heavily on that space of Millvale Studios. And we're just trying to, you know, do what we can to you know, lend community-based support and raise enough money as we can and help them in any way possible.
Yeah, probably, too, just showing up and showing that you care is going to mean an awful lot to folks who – you know, you lose not only the tools of your livelihood, but precious works that you can – I hate to – it feels like I'm rubbing salt in an open wound, but things you can never create again.
It's true.
It's got to be difficult. So that's Monday night at Mr. Small's.
Yeah.
Most folks are off Tuesday, so it should be a nice day.
Yeah, that's the best part about it.
For an event. Yep. Brian McQuaid is here playing, and – I was looking at your website. I don't know if you have too many places where you're playing out yourself coming up.
I'm actually taking a break right now. I'm in the studio. So April and May were really, really busy for me. I was almost starting to feel like I was kind of saturating my local market. Like, you only have so many fans. They only want to see you so often if you're not putting out new material. But I just had this block of really, really great shows that I set up, and friends were all coming through and touring at the same time, and I couldn't pass up.
Who knew he's got this supply and demand curve at home, like, to try to figure out the elasticity of Brian McQuaid?
Oh, it's a thing. It's definitely a thing. You could saturate your market in a second in a small town, and especially playing niche music. So
that's an interesting reflection. I never really thought about that. So when people say make yourself scarce growing up, that was actually good advice, maybe.
Yeah.
As opposed to just, see, I'm the youngest of three brothers also. And I can remember my brothers saying, you know, make yourself scarce. And little did I know they were actually being nice to me when they said that.
Well, if you're a valuable commodity, that just sends your price up. That's all.
I wish I could have had that retort. But how much older are your brothers than you?
My oldest brother is 6 years older than me. And middle brother is 15 months to the day older
okay.
than me. Okay.
My oldest is the same as your oldest, although the middle one is closer to him than to me. That age difference of 6 years can be pretty remarkable. Now you probably feel like peers, but when you're growing up, it's a big difference.
It's true. You know, I was my older brother's like shadow. I went to him for music and things of like like pop culture and everything like that interested me. And when he was 16 skateboarding with his buddies, I was, just, 10 years old trying to my best to keep up and everything like that. So, I kind of owe a significant portion of my musical path to him. He kind of, as best he could, kind of just would give me tapes and CDs and like, check this stuff out.
Yeah, he'd say, I'm going to go skateboarding here. Why don't you listen to Inagata De Vida? I'd like you to listen to it 10 times. And then when you're done, transcribe it.
Yeah. And when you're done, if he was a terrible brother, he probably would have.
That's what my brother would have done. not really. My brother did. It's interesting. He introduced me to probably three seminal records, I think. One by acoustic guitarist Leo Kottke.
Okay.
One by a Catalonian piano player, which it's bizarre. But
yeah.
And then Lambert Hendricks and Ross, the jazz trio, amongst many, many others.
Yeah.
He was coming up more sort of a contemporary of Bob Dylan. So he was a guitarist with the harmonica rack and playing.
Yeah.
And Van Morrison was another one, too.
Oh, Van Morrison's fantastic.
Yeah, that would be an interesting project. You know, music your brothers introduced you to.
Yeah.
Maybe. you're listening to the Saturday Light Brigade. Brian McQuaid is who we're talking to. I thinking the other day, too, about albums like Moondance by Van Morrison. If you were growing up, when you were growing up and you heard, at least in my case, music from the 20s or 30s that my parents might be listening to, that's what Van Morrison would be like today to kids growing up, because it's
hard. It's a tough call. I grew up in a household where, especially, so Van Morrison's early classics. And I'm actually ashamed to say that I actually thought until about like 10 years ago that Van Morrison was like a one-hit wonder. It was just like Brown Eyed Girl, and the song was very popular. I had no idea that he's been continually making fantastic music.
Oh, you shouldn't be ashamed
for
at all.
His
entire
lifetime.
Who knew? Yeah.
Until I started listening to like WIP like daily, I was like, oh my goodness, like,
yeah, so, there's a lot of deeper stuff.
Yeah, he made
there.
20 albums, and they're all just as good as the next one.
He's still putting some stuff out, too.
Yeah.
And still out there performing. And Moondance is probably, that album is an amazing album.
Yeah.
All in all. Which gets more from you as I digress here. What would you like to play next?
I'm going to play this one called Caroline. It's a very, very early song of mine. It's a essentially like my take on a murder ballad. Though I come from kind of like punk rock background, it was my mom who like turned me on to Dylan and stuff like that when I was a kid. She had fantastic taste in singer songwriters and some other stuff. But yeah, that's this one, Caroline.
Well, Caroline, I want you to take me down into the place where I belong. And Caroline, I want you to take me now into the place where I was born. And I feel that desperation shines a light on you and me. And we're running from their eyes and just feel we can be seen. Caroline, now I'm afraid for you. Won't you tell me you're afraid for me? And Caroline, the back seat is warm, but it's red, wet, and smells like iron. And Caroline, I can feel the heat and just leaving my bones. Oh, but baby, now please tell me, just tell me that it ain't true, that I'm dying by the hands of the man that laid them hands on you. Yeah, Caroline, put that pedal down. I'm afraid my time is drawing nigh. And Caroline, you gotta make this right, 'cause I feel we have no more time. Caroline, now take me to the banks of that creek before we lose the night. 'Cause you know I'd like to die tonight beneath that old oak tree that I carved those names and hearts. Mama will know you and me. 'Cause Caroline, I don't wanna die in Memphis, Tennessee, but on the banks of Weaver Creek down in Aberdeen. Well, Caroline, now take my head in your hand and just hold me till that sun starts to rise. Caroline, it's getting dawn. I can feel that light leaving my eyes. I can feel that light just leaving my eyes. I can feel that light just leaving.
Caroline, Brian McQuaid, that's a great song. And hearing you sing these out again is terrific. What's your album going to be like that you're working on now? You solo, or are you going to mix it up a little bit?
I'm going to mix it up a little bit. I'm actually real excited. The album's name is going to be called The Opener, which is also the title track. I'm one of those weird people who likes to be the opener for shows. But at the same time, I also the title track is kind of like tongue in cheek about maybe how the opener doesn't get any respect. You know what I mean? But for me, the job of opener at any show, I'm just a weird person that I like to start on time. People say, wait till the crowd gets here. I'm like, no, it's my job as the opener to start on time, play the best set possible. You know what I mean? Set the timeline, get everything on track, set the musical tone for the night. You know, I kind of want to be, you know, if no one's in the room and all the bands are in, you know, the bar and stuff like that, I'm driven to play an awesome set, and the people that are actually there, I kind of want to be like, yeah, beat that. You know, as I put my guitar case away and walk out of the room. It's just a way, you know, not it to be a, malicious, but, you know, keep me motivated.
It is a job. Have you ever thought about when you're starting on time and maybe nobody's sitting there? It's kind of like the movie that's playing to a theater.
Yeah.
The movie started on time, nobody's sitting in the theater, but then people eventually show up and they start to
If they're listen. In the other room and they hear what you do, you know, what you're doing, they'll come in.
It's actually a hard job because not that I'm saying, look at me, but there are times when I have to do that when you are emceeing a festival or something and you're starting before the folks that people came to see get started.
Mm-hmm.
It's a balancing act. It really is.
So, and sometimes you can't just wait for people to show up. And with a multi-band bill, there's so many times that if somebody's, you know, if four bands are playing, you know, at a bar some night, or even if what's terrible is if you have like the out of town act and stuff like that, and everyone starts like a little bit late, there's not too many people there, so the first band starts 20 minutes late, takes 20 minutes. The band that you came to see plays 20 minutes, and then you're kicking them out of the door. You can't even shake their hand and buy merch off them because it's 2:05 and everyone's like, get out. So,
it adds up, and people end up being disappointed. So the opener's the name of the CD, and then do you have some other musicians you're working with?
So I'm going to it's kind of going to be a secret right now. But I've asked – I'm really excited because there are some of my favorite local musicians who are dear friends. And I absolutely love that when I was in need of a band, I kind of just reached out to him. I'm like, do you want to back me up on doing this song? You know, so I went to a fantastic band in town. I'm not going to tell you their name yet. But I was like, can you play Caroline with me? And they're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, would love to. So I'm in the studio right now just kind of getting tracks down for everything that I'm going to do with sort of a sparse arrangement. And I'm really excited at the prospect that when it comes out, people are going to look on it and be like, oh, man, Brian McQuaid is playing with, notable friends and bands in town that are just like,
Well, it's good to get – no, it's terrific. When do you think it might come out?
I'm hoping for a March release of next year.
That sounds like a very reasonable schedule.
Yeah.
It's tough to make everything come together
on
that. Brian McQuaid is who is here right now. BrianMcQuaid.com is how you can learn more about him. BrianMcQuaid.com. And you'll find more about him. We probably have time for two or three more, depending on what you'd like to do.
I'll play a reasonable radio-friendly one, and then I have a short one.
Okey-doke.
So this is one of my favorite songs. I used to live in Mount Oliver. I lived in Mount Oliver for 7 years, and when I lived in Mount Oliver, you know, you see people with a fair degree of affluence coming, you know, like into the South Side from the South Hills, and you know, Mount Oliver is, you know, kind of a mixed neighborhood. There's a little bit of, you know, socioeconomic disparities going on there and stuff. But I noticed that everyone was trying to say something with their car. So if you were wealthy and you were well-to-do, you used your car as a totem of that affluence and everything like that. And if you didn't have very much, you took what little that you had and tried to make your car a standout. And I got to thinking one day, and I was like, I get that. I understand, why people do that with their vehicles. But I had the thought, which turned into one of my favorite songs of mine, which is that, if you drive a crappy car, it doesn't make you a crappy person. Because everyone wants to believe the opposite. If you drive an awesome car, then you must be an awesome person and stuff like that. So I wrote this one about my crappy car. I always give it, you know, out to the world, to everyone who drives crappy cars. It's called Paseo.
And now rebels, well, they all ride motorbikes. Yeah, but who drives a 1992 Toyota Paseo? Probably some jack-off never do nothing with his life. Well, he's probably sitting there on his couch, either drunk or unemployed. Probably listening to some Woody Guthrie tune, like Pretty Boy Floyd. But his lack of ambition tends completely and totally void any chance he's got of ever getting himself anywhere. Oh, but he's probably too stoned or stupid to even care. Well, now heroes, they still ride horses. And rebels, they still ride motorbikes. And pretty girls, they get to drive their boyfriend's new car. And a rich man, he drives anything that he likes. Bobby said, lack of ambition, probably that lack of a poet's spark that keeps them ever existentially and eternally in the dark. Hell, probably the only thing that guy will ever do is write some song about a fart and then get way too drunk to ever remember the words. Well, I've been bucked from a couple of horses, and I don't own a rebel motorbike, but I do drive a 1992 Toyota Paseo. I guess that tells you everything about my life.
Trying to picture the Paseo. A 92 Paseo.
Oh, I love that car, though.
That may... Our neighbor may have a car like that. I'm trying.
It was this tiny hatchback that was like that if you were over 5'7", you probably couldn't drive. You know, and I'm a 6'1", and I just kind of wrapped myself in there. I just, you know, like, didn't have much cushioning on the seat, so luckily I could sit, like, really, really low. But then it was difficult to get out of because, like, I just to get my leg out and on the ground and to step up, it was pretty funny. But it got amazing gas mileage. The only bad thing is that going up the hills in Pittsburgh, like Crane Avenue or P.J. McArdle, I couldn't decide whether it wanted to be – it was a four-cylinder. It mm-hmm. couldn't decide whether it wanted to be screaming in the top of second gear or, like, barely in third. So it would – that was the only bad thing.
It was Potomac Avenue that killed my 73 Dodge. It just the car – it was sad, but, you know, it enough hills will eventually do you after a while. It's been fun to have you here. You got one more to do.
Yeah, I'd do another one.
Which would be great. Is there anything we didn't mention that we should be talking about should have talked about? I mean, we should mention the benefit again for Millvale Art Studio. That's Monday night at Mr. Small's.
At the fun house upstairs.
Knowing how prompt you like to be as an opener, since you're hosting this, what time does it start?
So... because we're expecting like a fair amount of volume, and even it's an open mic night, mm-hmm. we're gonna ask people if they want to perform to try to get there before 7. And there's a list at the door when you come in, and you put that your name on the list as you arrive. And then when 7 hits, a couple minutes before 7, the people that are first to arrive through the door, they have first priority of where they want to perform throughout the night. so they get to pick their time spots, and we'll try to make everything work as best possible and as best we can. But we anticipate that there's going to be a large amount of people coming out from the community in order to lend a hand and stuff like that. So we don't in any way want to like dissuade the walk-ins from the street, because they add, they're beautiful. They lend to the flavor of.
Sure. When do doors open for the audience? Can they come in as?
I believe 6:00.
Okay. Well, that's Monday night, and we'll. I'm sure you can find out more information at Mr. Small's website if you go there.
Yeah.
That's this coming Monday. It's been great to have you here.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was great for having me. Thank you so much.
And what do you want to finish up with?
This one is. I feel it's kind of apropos. This is the convergence of my musical upbringing and my current musical taste. So I introduced the song when I play it live as saying, like, this is what happens when you listen to too much George Jones and the Ramones in the same time frame, which kind of sums it up pretty well for me. It's like my two loves and musical passions that sometimes just meld their way into one another. But this one's called Western Winds.
So many things, girl, but you know it just don't seem right. Yeah, and I've been standing here on this side of crazy, wondering just what you gonna do tonight. But when you try to finally understand, but you know I'll be seeing you again. Anytime you talk, the only sound I hear is just the sound of them western winds. Well, it's a toxic tonic, the bitterest pill. Now just a bus will go down a stagnant swill. And the moment I'm on it, can't try to pretend that I'm never gonna get you back again. But now when you try to finally understand, you know I'll be seeking you again. Anytime you talk, the only sound I hear is just the sound of them western winds.
Thanks so much, Brian McQuaid. Here and check him at BryanMcQuaid.com to learn more.